I'm sitting here backstage with Rick. How was it tonight in Aarhus?
It was wet.
It
was very wet, but it was very, very good. I mean, I must say, I think the Danes are quite like the English in that way, the British, that we just put up with the weather because we get the weather, whatever happens, you know. And I've had some beautiful days in Denmark. Obviously, I spent a lot of time in Denmark. My wife is Danish, family, you know, all the rest of it. So you just get on with it. And the crowd were great, to be honest. So as long as they're okay, then I'm okay. Do you know what I mean? And we have a good time.
Are they real fans? I mean,
I mean, I think the time in my life now, I think people. Sorry, I'm drinking Danish beer and burping on the radio. I think at my age now, my time of life, I do have fans, obviously, yeah, and that is fantastic and it's amazing. But I also think there's a lot of people who like coming out to shows tonight, whether they like Kim, you know, whether they like myself, whoever is on. They kind of want to relive some moments, and obviously there are certain songs that mean more to them and all the rest of it. But I think music in general, live, is stronger than it's ever been, and people more than ever want to go out and see live music because music is kind of free now. You can just stream anything from any decade, from any period, anything, but you can't recreate the thing of going to a concert. So I think we're lucky, really, in the sense that we went through the 80s and what have you, and the 90s, what have you, but live music is stronger than it's ever been, even from those decades, you know.
I see many young people out there. Do you think they're coming because they've heard about this Rick Rowling thing?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of that, obviously, definitely. Yeah, I'm not fooling myself. Yeah. But having said that, my daughter's 23, and some of the bands that she, and records that she absolutely loves, are maybe even from the 70s. And, like, she loves Motown as well. She absolutely loves Motown. And lots of different kinds of music, to be honest. You know, and she'll play me records, and I'll think, how the hell is she? But obviously she's heard it on the internet, she's on YouTube, whatever. So I guess that's just, you know, that's what happens. The younger audience picks up on things through the internet.
Yeah. But Never Gonna Give You Up was your first hit, written by Stock, 8 Killer Waterman. Was a huge success in the 80s. And then you suddenly stopped. I mean, how was that?
Well, I think I'd been doing it for 4 or 5 years, and I had a life where, you know, I had to travel almost every day of my life. Our daughter Amelia had been born, and I just kind of felt there was more to life than getting on another plane and being away from my family, you know, and it was a number of things. I just got a bit bored of it all. I didn't really ever really truly love the fame side of it. Being famous is a wonderful thing as long as you can use it to your advantage, but when it becomes out of your control and it's almost like at everyone else's kind of behest, then it's not much fun, to be honest. Like I say, being famous is fantastic as long as you're in control of it, and the moment you're not, it isn't much fun then.
But the success meant that you could really retire, semi-retire.
Absolutely. I mean, I say it on stage very often how grateful I am, and I mean it. It's not just some corny line. I absolutely mean it. My wife and I, very often, you know, we'll be staying in some beautiful hotel, kind of getting ready for me to go over and do a gig, or maybe we're staying somewhere fantastic for a couple of days after a gig, and we both just look at each other over dinner and just say how lucky we are, because all these years later I'm still getting to travel because of those songs. And obviously the concert is the main thing, but if I'm absolutely honest, I try and turn it all into a bit of a holiday. I try and treat it, because back in the day when I used to travel, I didn't really see a lot of anything. You know, I went to Paris probably 10 times before I actually saw Paris, you know what I mean?
And, before you saw the Eiffel Tower.
Well, I remember very, very vividly, remember being in Rome once, and it was pouring down, actually, and I actually said to the driver, I was in the car with two record company people and my manager, and I said to the driver, just grabbed his shoulder and I said, just stop right now. I want to get out of the car, because we were going past the Colosseum and it was pouring down, and I said, I want to just get out now, because I'd been to Rome probably half a dozen times and never stood outside the Colosseum. So I just stood there in the pouring rain and I looked, there's some marble maps just outside that show the Roman Empire, what it was and what Rome is today. And I just wanted to stand there and take it in the rain. I just think moments like that, you kind of think how bizarre and how ridiculous it all is, that, you know, I've travelled the world a couple of times actually, but not really seen it. So now when we go and do gigs, yes, I do a couple of interviews like this one, but I'm not doing interviews all day, do you know what I mean? It's about doing the concerts, really. So I do the gigs, and You know, I've been to South America a couple of times recently, last couple of years. I've been to Australia twice. And things like that, most people, it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Yeah. And I'm lucky that I get to do it every couple of years sometimes. You know what I mean? And so when we look at it in the calendar, we say, great, let's try and stay for a few days, you know, and let's go and drink some nice Chilean wine and hang out. So that's what I do.
Your daughter, she's too old. She don't want to travel with daddy anymore.
Well, it's funny. I think she's old enough now that she's gone through that period where she's quite happy to come away with us on holiday and stuff. She actually is the she studies in Denmark. She lives in Denmark. She lives in Copenhagen. Yeah. So I'm really glad about that because she's half Danish at the end of the day, and I think it's very easy to live in London or what have you, and be half Danish or half Dutch or half whatever, and kind of have that as a kind of, you know, it's a part of your life, but it's not. You're not completely integrated with it. Whereas she has been living in Denmark for 3 years, and I miss her, obviously, because she's not down the road. But on the one,
grandmother is there.
Yeah, exactly. But I also think it's really important for her because she totally culturally understands Denmark. She lives here. She speaks the language completely fluently, and it's part of who she is. And there was a time in her life when she would never have lived anywhere else than London. It's like London,
yeah,
London,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And but she loves Copenhagen, she loves Denmark, and so, you know, I really enjoy that. I think I see the value in that and how lucky she is. You could say that about any country in the world, but I do think Denmark is quite special. It's still got some things that the rest of the world have forgotten about. I don't know how long you're going to have those,
no.
But it still does have some things. It still seems to be, or a certain generation anyway, people are certainly still bothered about quality of life above everything else. And for certain countries, that's long gone. Yeah. It's all about commerciality and money and all the rest of it. Mm. And I think Scandinavia in general, is still a pocket of the world where you can find a different kind of a lifestyle, I think. So I think it's great that she's been lucky enough to have that, you know.
Great words. I mean, we should stop the interview here. I just have to ask you about how is it to come into radio, because like Kim Wilde, you're doing a radio program on Magic.
I actually bump into Kim quite a bit doing that show, yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. I mean, obviously both of us, we've been on this side of the microphone, you know, yeah, a lot for years and all the rest of it. It's funny, I used to actually do interviews on my show as well, and I kind of really enjoyed it, and I felt it was a bit like doing therapy.
Yeah.
Because I'd meet people, sometimes not musicians, sometimes they were actors or, you know, whatever. But there's still that kind of kindred spirit about performing, I think, and what it does to you privately as well. Do you know what I mean? Your private life outside of being on a stage. Yeah. And, you really used to enjoy that. And and I still enjoy doing the show now because it's kind of... Radio, I think, was a massive, huge thing when I was a kid. Without radio... I don't know how I would have experienced music, because obviously kids do it now with the internet, and I totally get that, but I still think they're still bothered about radio. I still think it's a big thing in their lives. But when I was a kid, it was the radio. Do you know what I mean? That's how you heard your records, and that's then how you became a fan of certain bands. Saturday morning, you'd go down, you'd buy your favourite record, you'd play it to death, and you keep listening to the radio, and another record would come along, and that's... We grew up with that, you know what I mean? So it still means something to me, I think, being on the radio, and I think... You know, if I ever hear myself on the radio here, there and there, what have you, then I kind of think, well, yeah, what a strange world we live in. But,
yes.
but I do also think that, yeah, I think, you know, without radio, I think an awful lot of people would have never been inspired even to get in a band or to do, you know what I mean? So, yeah, we all obviously owe a debt to radio in terms of having records played. But like I say, we would have never have got involved in making music, I don't think, without it. So,
well, nice talking to you.